Bonsoir. How are you, dear friends? We are building the most inspiring and phenomenal communities of wine lovers. As we all know, wine is the catalyst of the greatest discussion. We'll be talking wine, but of course food, and everything that touches all our nation and senses. Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends. This is JCB Live, one of the most unique and exceptional happy hour. We're going to be diving into one of the most intricate part of our body, the one who governs, the one who controls, the one who dictates, the one who is the actual everything that we need. I have another one today, just in case I lose mine, because she's irresistible. She's very charming. We met, believe it or not, as she's a JCB collector. She loves wine. She lives in San Francisco. She is a famous neuropsychologist, a clinical psychologist as well. So she's going to think of you as much as she thinks of me. And she's going to tell us everything about the brain and how the brain interacts with your senses and how everything eventually makes sense. She was featured on so many great magazines, from Vogue to GQ to all of them. You will see why. And I'm delighted to introduce you to a new friend. And we'll give you her website, because in case you need help, as I do, don't we all? We have wine, but Dr. Kate, please come in.
Hello!
Woo! Ooh la la! Even the wine got intimidated. So, dear friends, I got to tell you, this is a unique moment in my life, because this is the first time I get to meet Dr. Kate in the circumstances, into the intensity of the moments. So, Dr. Kate, how are you?
I'm pretty good today. The bubbles are flowing.
We are tasting LVE. One of the wines that we produce with our great friends, John Legend. And this is a wonderful wine, sparkling wine, Méthode Champenoise, all the way from France. So we brought France to you.
Well, thank you, especially since we can't go there right now because of all the travel restrictions. So here we are.
I promise I'll take my big French accent for you. So Dr. Kate, how do we become a neuropsychologist? And how does that work?
So I'm a clinical psychologist, and I fell in love with the brain because I'm a scientist by nature, and I need to know what is going on when I take in wine, for example. So at school, I decided that I needed to know everything there was about the field of clinical psychology. So I learned all the theories and decided that neuroscience was an interest of mine. So here I am today, and I'm going to teach you a little bit about the brain, because I think it's really important to have some information on how you think and process information.
So the brains, tell us how it works, because you so kindly brought one of the best samples of it. I thought we could go into mine, but we will go into my mind shortly. So how does it work, these beautiful things? Is it really controlling all of us? And
it
everything
is.
Of us?
Yes, we're very lucky to have this beautiful thing hanging out in our, on the top of our head, or in our head. While you are going through your wine tasting, do you want me to walk through a little bit of what's happening here?
This is going to be fun, because which part of the brain do we actually activate? So let's say, maybe you give us an overview of how it works very quickly.
Okay.
The front
to
the back.
So your brain is created from the front to the top. So you have children, right?
Yes.
So when you think about their development, if you think about how they started crawling and then standing up and then walking, and then they slowly started talking and they gained emotion and then they started remembering things, and then all of a sudden they become little teenagers and they're coming up with their own ideas. So that happens because when we are really young, the hindbrain is really what's kind of forcing the human condition into its experiences. So that's all of your movement, your respiratory, your sleeping, your eating. And then in your midbrain, that starts developing around the age of 5-ish, 3 to 5. That's where you start having emotion connected to memories. Mm-hmm. So I know that you've had emotions connected to memories like when you were seven, like with your number seven.
I think first one in my life that I love is a red one. Great
exactly.
memory.
Exactly. Yeah. So with, you know, for you to remember that and that be a part of your experience on why you wanted to have the JCB collection, that's because that memory evoked so much in you that you decided that you needed to create wine for the rest of your life, right?
Very much so.
So that's created in your limbic system,
which is where?
It's on the inside.
Ooh, so. It looks like a beautiful peacock even.
Yeah, so your limbic system,
a rooster on the top.
It's hidden, I think, because our emotions are so vulnerable. So they're on the inside in there. And then your hippocampus, which is your memory storage. The way that I integrated remembering that in graduate school is someone told me, if you saw a hippo on a campus, you would never forget that in your life. So
for sure.
Your hippocampus is your memory storage, and just think about seeing a hippo on a campus. So
that I can remember.
So, and our limbic system, our amygdala, where we have emotional reactions,
yes.
That is directly connected to your hippocampus. And it gives us the opportunity to create all these beautiful experiences with memories.
Mm.
So after that, we've got your frontal cortex. That's the top of the brain.
That's the very important one for me.
And why is that?
Well, you'll tell us.
Well, so the frontal cortex isn't fully developed until the age of 25. It is executive functioning. So reasoning, judgment, planning. It is the reason why human beings are so different than any other mammals that have a brain. And it gives us special experiences, especially when you're creating wine.
Yes.
Like wine is such a unique process. It's about what you appreciate, what you like, how many tannins you like to taste, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So that's all envisioned in your frontal cortex. And then all of these colors are all the different senses. So I think obviously because you are such a sensing person, we're
yes.
going to go through the experiences of the senses today.
I love it.
So we've got a ton of different lobes and we'll kind of go fuller into detail as we move forward on that.
So let's smell as an example. So let's work with the sense of smell. So let's first have a toast. So there's two big emotions, the sound, the earring, the crystal,
mm-hmm.
and then the fabulous flavors that are coming out of this glass. So what, in a few words, what flavors do you identify?
Cut. What?
Raspberry.
You didn't tell me I was going to have wine taste, really.
We'll keep that part. So now, Dr. Kate, we are smelling. We heard the beautiful sound of crystal.
Mm-hmm.
So where does it travel in your brain? And how does the information, we heard first the sound, but then the smell, as my glass was coming to you, I was already
That's
smelling
right.
the wine.
That's right.
Because I feel my number one skill is my nose. That's the most valuable part because with my nose, I have a feeling I taste as well.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us how it works.
So our brain has these receptors and it basically is constantly processing information. So when you are driving down the road or drinking wine or spending time watching the television, your brain is processing information at an unconscious level constantly.
Yes.
If you're touching a table, if you're sitting on a chair, if you're thinking about the clothing that you have on, if you're thinking about the wine you're about to taste. So because of these sensory receptors, if we were conscious in every single moment of our thought process, it would be totally overwhelming,
mm-hmm.
right? So we instead incorporate these ideas of what are things we like, what are things that make sense to us. And so when you're looking at this wine, for example, it's got a nice peachy color.
Yes. Very nicely said.
And it's beautiful. So those are your receptors taking in sensory information, which
yes.
are rods and cones, processing it back in your occipital lobe, which believe it or not is all the way back in your brain.
So why do we have to go all the way back? Why are they located there instead of here?
I don't know. I didn't create the human.
You'll well, you're have making to ask, the human evolve.
You'll have so. To ask Mother Nature or God or whatever your belief system is on why it's back there.
But you're right. When I smell wine, I'll often say to people, just don't think of words, think about memories. And I'd love for us to talk about this because, as an example on this wine, I have a feeling that I'm in July in the garden picking up raspberries and strawberries. So I have this memory of mint, raspberry, strawberry, a little bit of cassis, and a very fresh environment that is vibrant, cool, and makes me think maybe of water as well. So that's the memory working. So how do we correlate smell to memory, and how is the memory working within this whole process?
So we integrate smell by those sensory information processors coming in and creating odors.
Yes.
And you identify those because you have a memory system of all the other backlog of wine tasting or being out in the fields with the strawberry picking or the raspberry picking. And so I've created pleasurable experiences in the past in your hippocampus, which is in your limbic system, like we went over a little bit ago.
Yes.
Then you
even know where that is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Then you will always experience the raspberry or the strawberry picking when you pick up this wine, because it reminds you of what it's like to be connected to that taste or that experience long ago.
So maybe to recommend people to taste wine is to go in their memory bank and to try to suggest to them, instead of thinking of words or adjectives, to say, tell me what this wine makes you think of in your own personal life. What about for you? Does it make you think of anything specific? It could have been the first kiss. It could have been a cologne from your grandmother.
Well, I will tell you, I grew up in Kentucky. So being on horse farms was where I always was experiencing my little childhood life. And so when I come up to Napa, I feel like I'm taken back to those experiences. And obviously, I'm not a child anymore living in Kentucky. I live in San Francisco and I've lived here for a long time. But when I come up here, I experience the country roads and that I listen to old songs and I drink wine that I probably never could have afforded or thought about when I was younger. And it's just a good experience because it brings me back to where I used to be. Mm-hmm. And then it reminds me of where I'm going.
So that's what wine does to you. This is pretty exceptional.
Absolutely.
So we need to change color and we need to go from the rosé maybe to the chardonnay.
Okay.
And we should do... I know the brains have two parts. I love when it brings both together and apart. So now I'd love to get your feeling and your emotion on this wine, which would be the LVE Chardonnay. So this is a wine we created with John. Mm-hmm. And as a memory, we created this wine together. And he had an idea of a rich, quite buttery Chardonnay, but not too much, some exotic feeling that makes me him think of islands and beautiful remote places. That is harmonious, rich, and with a very long finish. That is his description. So the memory we had, which was amazing, is together blending and making this wine to exactly the description he's had. So why don't you tell us what you feel as you taste it and where it takes you as far as taste now.
Yeah, so tell me also, why did he come to you with wanting to create wine?
Well, about you and became his... friends, and then he loved the red room and of course the blending room. And I think it's a very important aspect to cover as well, is the creation. Where does it fit in the brand and how does it work? Because he's a very creative individual, loves to create his own music, from the music to the songs. And I remember forever him describing the wines and saying, Jean-Charles, this is what I would like to achieve. So we kept playing, refining back and forth, and we finally succeeded where he said, that's it. And he said, do you want to make a wine? And I said, originally, no. Because, you know, we make enough wine on our own. And he brought a great talent, a different style of wine, as you will try, which really, for both of us, made a lot of sense to do because, again, we both on the creative side, I would say, but at the same time, it was very fun to bring different flavor, taste, and profile of mouth and brains together to create something that I had never done. So none of those wines we're trying today, I had ever made them before.
Wow.
So it was a pure creation from scratch.
Yeah. That's lovely that the two of you came together. I think that the opportunity to create something live and give it out to other people is very similar to what music does for
us. Right.
So, you know, if you look at what it's like to experience music and bring it in and create it in your brain, it's very dynamic and it like pops in many different directions. It gets you to move with your cerebellum. It creates the emotional experience,
yes,
the limbic system. It's language cortex, so it's on your left side of your brain. It's also your right side of the brain, which is all where your music and acoustics come in.
So the music and the acoustic is right here.
Right side of the brain.
Good.
Your language cortex, which is your conduction, so ability to speak and then bring it in.
Yes.
That is all on your left side of your brain. So having the two of you create wine together is kind of like coming up with an orchestra.
That's right.
Way, you know, and I'm sure John does a lot of different collaborations with other musicians. So
very much so. And this is an orchestra. This is, the inspiration is obviously beauty on this case. It's a wine which is meant to be transformative as well. And I'd love for you to tell us about how the brain process the transformation and the evolution of wine over a period of time. As an example, you know, we taste this wine now, we're going to taste it in an hour. Mm-hmm. The wine is not going to be the same. The wine would have evolved, but we would have evolved. So how does that work in your mind?
That's true. Well, when you take in wine, ethanol is obviously the part of the alcohol,
yes,
and it goes down your esophagus into your stomach, and then it gets absorbed by your blood. And then it goes up into your brain, and all of these things happen to the functioning of your brain. And then over time, it starts changing and shifting. So when you're looking at the excitement of alcohol, the excitement of the experience of drinking wine, it's all about how it gets brought into your system and then transitions into some of your brain parts. So, Do you want a little information on that?
Oh, for sure. Let's go back to it.
So when you're looking again, you want to take a sip of wine?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, always yes.
It's always yes with wine.
So there it goes. It goes in, down mm-hmm. the esophagus, into the stomach, and it gets absorbed by the bloodstream.
Yes.
Your frontal cortex, which is what we talked about, that judgment, reasoning, and planning, that gets eliminated a little bit. And that part of your brain is the reason that we're really performance driven, we're motivated,
yes,
we always are analytically thinking. And while it's really good to be a human that's doing that, it's also pretty exhausting if you're always functioning on performance anxiety.
That's right.
So for you to sit down with John and have the experience of creating wine mm-hmm. and then enjoying it and bringing it in, eventually, over time, with a glass or two or four, I don't know how many the two of you have drank together.
More than four to create those.
A bottle each, three bottles each. Your frontal lobe starts to let go of its structure, of its, you know, demand on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you the opportunity to sort of let loose in a way. And not in like a dysfunctional way by
sure.
any means. But
do you mean you lose a little bit your balance or you...
So that little... happens too. Yeah. So that actually happens in the cerebellum, which is in the back. That's a part that is responsible for your motor abilities back to like your children when they were learning how to walk and balance. Your neurons were in the pruning process in the cerebellum. So they were learning how to balance and stand upright. So when you're drinking alcohol, there's
yes.
a little bit of disinhibition that happens, and you kind of start feeling a little bit looser and freer in your body movement, which is also pretty similar to music if you think about it, right? Because if you're at John's concert and his music evokes some motor reaction in you, that's your cerebellum letting loose and letting go. And it's really a wonderful expression of the human condition. And we get to do that when we're given permission by society.
Yes.
And so we get permission to do that when we're wine tasting or when we're at concerts you know, and traveling, those type of things. So,
mm-hmm. So then when we taste, what happens as we, so we talk a lot about the sense of smell, mm-hmm. you know, the sound. Give us more of your personal as well emotion as you taste and where it travels and how we process the tasting information to our brain and then analyze it.
Do you remember the five senses or the five tastes?
Yes.
What are they?
Well, tell me. You're the doctor. I have the book, The Alchemy of the Senses. I could cheat.
No, you don't need to cheat. I'll give you the information. So it's salt,
yeah.
Sweet,
mm-hmm.
Sour,
acidity, bitter, yeah.
And umami.
That's right. So, what about the sixth one, the fatness on the side of the tongue?
I don't know about that
you
one.
You see, I got Dr.
What?
There. Well, in our book, Passion for Wine,
uh-huh.
which is another book we've created, there's a clear definition of the tongue. And we talk about the side of the tongue as well, which really measures what we have a lot in this wine is the richness of it. So okay. Bitterness, acidity, salt and sugar,
mm-hmm.
umami in the middle.
Right.
You know, that famous, beautiful Japanese words. Mm-hmm. And then on each side, we have that sensory, which measures the fatness of a wine or the richness of the wine. The oiliness of a fish, if it's eel versus halibut, or if it's obviously Chardonnay versus Sauvignon Blanc,
mm-hmm.
it approaches your tongue very differently. Yeah.
So then how did you and John sit down and decide that the Chardonnay was hitting the tongue in every palate in
well,
the perfect way to give it out to the public?
Well, I think exactly what you've pronounced is the fact on the front end, it really hit what we love, which mm-hmm. is that combination of salt and sugar. On the back, acidity and bitterness. And then the richness in the mouth. This is why in wine, we say, as if you brush your teeth, make it circulate all around. And then you really will feel it fully. And then, as you said, very rightfully, so the umami, which is in the middle mm-hmm. of your tongue. So when it sits in the middle and it's there, it's apotheotic. It's like the nirvana moment. It's orgasmic even. Mm-hmm. When a wine just sits on your tongue and it irrigates every part of you and goes everywhere in your body. Because I think as we taste, we smell.
We do.
Right?
Your smell is, yeah, your smell is really responsible for what you are tasting, and they're really intercorrelated. So, you know, to be able to do both of those things together creates more of like a wow factor or an exceptional experience or a memory that you're going to create and keep forever. And obviously what you and John want is to remember the Chardonnay the first time someone drinks it. They never let it go, and it's on their shelves for the rest of their lives, right? So
absolutely. Now, how do you advise all our friends with us today to practice intellectually and with their brain on one of their senses? Let's say I have a weakness, which I have many, but in the sensory side, which is maybe the only strength I have, is I smell and taste. But I want to practice and develop my sense of taste. Mm-hmm. How would you recommend you advise all of us to practice in this direction besides drinking a lot of wine?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the most beautiful piece of being a part of being a human
yes.
is that you get to recognize your strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're looking at strengths and weaknesses, are you married?
Yes.
So your wife probably has a lot of strengths that
of
you
course.
Are very weak in.
Yes.
And maybe not so much vice versa. She's probably most of the time
oh,
right.
But of
and
course.
You're probably not right that often.
Well, I will toast to that. I'm never right. And I'm most of the time left-handed too. So that's
are you? Oh,
so.
Yeah. I'm left-handed as well. There we go. But yeah. So, you know, I think incorporating your strengths and recognizing
yes.
that is your knowledge base. That's the foundation of who you are. That's a wonderful gift that you have. If you want to work on a weakness,
yes.
you can practice and practice and practice,
sure.
but it's never going to be one of your strengths. And being vulnerable to the recognition of that is really what the psychology of the human experience is about.
Uh-huh. So define vulnerability. Define what is to be vulnerable.
Vulnerable.
What is to accept it and what is to deal with it, because it's not easy.
No, it's not. And I spend my days talking to people
yeah,
about
sure.
their vulnerabilities in their relationships, in their self-image, in their opportunities that they've lost. And, you know, I think the most beautiful thing about being a human is that we are able to create vulnerability and expose ourselves in that space.
Sure.
And if you process it and talk about it, then it's not as scary. It's not this hidden secret. Secrets mm-hmm. really tend to deaden us and make us small. And so if we create an opportunity to get big and open and vulnerable, then
yes.
then you are in a space where you can create change.
It takes a lot of strength to go there. Not
it
easy.
Does.
But we have wonderful doctors like Dr. Kate to help us to go there. So do you serve a glass of wine to your patient?
I do not.
I thought all those cases of JCB were coming to your practice.
No, they're coming straight to my house. I'm not going to lie. I have a lot of high profile clients and individuals who are really stressed and running the state of California. And I really suggest that they go drink a glass of wine after the end of the day for a healthy coping strategy, because it helps them unwind and relax and feel good and feel free from all that anxiety and stress. And, you know, it's a really important thing to be able to disconnect from all of the stressors. And I think that wine does that. It doesn't mean you need to be drinking four bottles, but if you have a glass after your child has thrown a temper tantrum or after you've had a huge business meeting, and it helps you reduce your stress and anxiety, and it helps de-escalate your sympathetic nervous system, then that's a wonderful experience. And that's what you're trying to do for people. You're trying to create wonderful experiences where they feel full and they feel valued and recognized. And that's really what I do in my private practice as well.
Well, you know why I'm excited is this glass of wine is actually a bottle of wine. So you could say, have a glass of the Passion Collection. You put the whole bottle and you can have the whole bottle for yourself.
That's true. That is absolutely true. I think I need to get a set of these.
So what does wine do to your brain and your body? How does it relax you? Explain us more technically. How does that work? And why we should not abuse it as well either.
Yeah, abuse is obviously not what you're going for either, no, I can imagine, as a wine connoisseur. What are the reasons that you create wine for people?
Well, for me to share the ultimate pleasure. In wine, there's culture, emotion, passion, senses, history. Mm-hmm. It's a monument of stories. And for me specifically, when I create wine, depending which one I create, whether it's California or French, or where in California, I build a story. And I'd love for you to tell me how my brain functions in that, because now I would imagine Dr. Kate having the JCB passion as an example. And why do I want her to have it? And in which context I want her to have it? Mm-hmm. So when I create the wine and assemble the parts, and create the Cabernet, the Merlot, the Cabernet Franc, I think of the parts and I think of you. And maybe I want Dr. Kate to come from an intense day, relax on her beautiful velvet couch, take those high heels, pour herself a glass of wine, meet some friends later, but just relax and be, you know, introspective about the day and, you know, think about herself and what it evokes to her. So I build a story.
Yeah, so you're building a story for other people.
Yes.
It's a selfless cause.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the wines, so there's two approaches in winemaking. There's creativity and terroir-oriented wines.
Okay.
So terroir, let's say we're drinking tonight a Clos Vougeot. It's from a special area in Burgundy. This is the style of wine we're going to create that comes from Mother Nature. The less we do, the better it is. Right? In this instance,
less is more.
In Napa Valley, we're creating among a series of great vineyards an amazing blend. And the idea is to bring the parts together to create a certain emotion. So we're a creator. Mm-hmm. It's a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea.
So you want to create emotions and also connection to the senses.
That's right.
In order to give a selfless experience to those who take in your wine so that they continue to enjoy their life.
That's it.
That's
it's
beautiful.
Very well said. And that's why each of the numbers on the JCB or LV, this direction of several wines, to really be able to invite you to depart in a direction that is, you know, could be all about emotion and feelings and seductiveness and sensuality, or more transformative, or eventually more creative. Mm-hmm. So we really go through all the palettes and we create wine in that context. Many people say, I like this wine, I want everybody to like this wine.
Mm.
And this is the case maybe of the next wine. So you need to finish this.
Okay.
I know you can.
Well, I was going to say, I think you make so many different types of wine that you're trying to make sure that everyone feels included and incorporated in your wine collections, which is a really beautiful thing, because there's so much creativity and dynamic ability and opportunity in winemaking, but you have to be able to put yourself in a vulnerable position.
Yes.
To put yourself out on the line, to be able to create the memories with other people.
Well, and making wine is very challenging because you're talking about pleasure. It's like a chef. And I'm sure you have many chefs as well as your client, because you know you're as good as your last dish or as good as your last plate you've served. Mm-hmm. So if you miss, this is very challenging because you get the bad review or you get challenged. So I think in wine, we are exactly in that position where we want to please, but at the same time, we want to convey, as I was saying, a story, a theatrical scene, an emotion, mm-hmm. and something coming out of you. That really is what we want you to
say. That's so similar to the field of psychology as I'm hearing you talk about that, because, you know, I have to have enough energy for each one of my clients that is walking into the room, and each one of their stories, their vulnerabilities, their challenges, their weaknesses have to be just as important in that 50 minutes that they get my attention. And we've got to figure out how to get to the root of the matter.
Yes.
And make sure that they are seen and heard. And then they can go pop off and go live their lives for the rest of their week and come back and see me the next time, or in this case, via video because of the pandemic. But
how is it to be such a great listener? You've always been such a great listener.
I have. I think so. Well, it's hypothesis testing too,
really?
Right? So you listen to someone, but you're also trying to help understand their perspective and then help create the opportunity for perspective shifting. So I always tell my clients that I'm the co-captain of their ship, mm-hmm. or, you know, the number one cheerleader. And we look at the issues that they are dealing with, and we try to figure out how to manage those issues. And then we try to come up with alternative solutions. And it's really beautiful to see a human being overcome certain situations and scenarios that are stressing them out or creating anxiety or depression. You know, when somebody can come into my office and they're like, it's been 6 months and I'm not sleeping 20 hours a day. I'm now sleeping 7 hours a day. Or, you know, I do a lot of sports psychology. So, you know, all of a sudden my golf game is like so much more poignant, and or I'm coaching at a level that just feels so much more important. Like my team is listening to me. It's really special because we get to create that experience of them feeling vulnerable and heard, them changing, them empowering themselves. And I think you do that with wine as well. You know, you empower an individual to feel like they're relaxing, and I think the wonderful thing about your wine club membership is that you get to feel like you're a part of a system or culture. And that's really important for people to feel like they're seen and known.
That's right. Is it one of your number one observation of your clients in general, is wanting to be listened and heard and be able to expose to someone in a very safe place what they have to say?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the one thing about finding a really good clinical psychologist is that it's your job to be a great husband to your wife, to be a great father to your children, to be a great business partner, right? Et cetera, et cetera. You have all these roles in your self-identity. Mm-hmm. And if you have a professional that's listening to you once a week, then you offload all the damaging stuff that could be damaging in all the other relationships. And then you move into your work mode or your father mode or your husband mode. And that's really important, you know, because you get that opportunity to feel heard and seen. And then you get to go do what you need to do in all these other places in your life.
So how do you do it? You take notes?
I don't. No, I take notes the very first day.
Yes.
And then I just memorize it. I memorize all the key players in my clients' lives. And I remember, you know, what they're going through. I do take notes if I give them homework assignments, because I think that's important that I make sure that they're kind of staying on top of things. But besides that, try to just stay as vulnerable to the process as possible.
That's amazing. So do your client lay on the sofa?
They do not. So that's very Freudian, and that's very outdated.
I'm a big fan of Freud, of course.
It's a little outdated, John Charles. No offense. No, he's the grandfather of psychology, so he's wonderful. I actually went and saw his museum in, where is that? Vienna. Is it? Yeah, I think so. But no, I use a lot of different techniques such as acceptance and commitment therapy and cognitive behavioral therapies. And there are a bunch of different interventions that you get schooled in when you're in graduate school. And
very, yeah. So you sit next to one another like we are?
We sit across the room, I think, to create space so that the person feels like if they're going to have a cathartic experience or a somatic experience to a story they're telling me, like grief and loss, for example, of a loved one, like I think it's important to give them space so that they can cry, feel vulnerable, but I'm not imposing in their space. Yeah, so we sit across from each other, and normally my clients are so forward-thinking that they normally make sure that they're taking charge of their session, so I don't
really
have to do much. Yeah,
and you don't even serve them a glass of wine.
I don't.
So, as you're my patient today, a glass of wine.
Here we are.
So, I would like you to describe us in a few words this wine from memory, just from what it makes you feel. And you could have the leather of the saddle of a horse in Kentucky, you could have the hay just being cut, which could be reminiscent of the toastiness of the oak, or you could have the sense of the bourbon, maybe.
That's
which is
true.
In your nose.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really smooth. The color is wonderful as well.
Well, what does it make you feel?
Well, I want to hear from you first, since you are the creator. You and John were the creator.
Well, you're from Kentucky, so you could think of maybe bourbon in some sense, the saddle of the horse. There's a lot of leather. Maybe chocolate.
Dark chocolate. Cacao.
Cacao.
Definitely.
That's right. And then maybe the outdoors, something that makes you think of maybe the fireplace. I think there's some great toastiness on the woods that is beautiful, very gentle and mild.
What would you pair this with?
Well, you tell me.
Oh. That's your job, not
well,
my job.
I would love to do it with, maybe a dish that John loves, which is crayfish in a barbecue sauce. Or
would Chrissy be making it?
I'm for sure.
I mean, she is
She's the number one
American female chef of the hour, I feel like, at this point.
I know, and a great book and selling very well because people are very inspired.
Yeah.
Talking about inspiration, Dr. Kate, what inspires you?
What
Let's talk about you now. Let me psychoanalyze you.
Oh,
that's my turn.
This never happens. What inspires me? The act of people coming undone from the trauma and the grief and loss and the anxieties and the oppression, watching them develop and mold and evolve into the best version of their sense of self. That's what inspires me. It is amazing to partner with creative individuals and people that are intelligent and passionate about specific activities or their occupation, and they aren't compassionate towards themselves. And so I get to teach people how to do that in our private practice sessions. And it's beautiful to watch the evolution of self-love because it creates dynamic opportunities for reintegration of healthy relationships.
Sure.
It creates the opportunity to try out new things and become a little bit more optimistic and become more social. And, you know, I get to watch my clients walk through these processes, and it's just beautiful. So that is what inspires me. And I also...
So helping others, really.
Helping others. And
you've always loved others.
I guess so. Yeah. I'm the eldest of three. So I guess I've had to love others because I've always called
You're
my siblings.
Charge.
Yeah. They called them my baby chicks, and I was always carrying them around. So, yeah, but it's really wonderful to get to help others.
Yes, for sure.
And to get to watch people become their authentic true self and the best possible version.
And what is your passion? Because you seem to have a lot besides wine. I know you're very passionate about wine.
I do love wine. I really, in my lifetime, would love to destigmatize mental health, to make it a conversation that when people come to your dinner parties, once the pandemic is over, you talk about going to your psychologist, like you talk about going to your fitness instructor, or like you talk about chatting with a chef about, you know, coming up with a whole 30 plan or whatever it is. I think that the most holistic approach to the human condition is when we're taking care of our fitness, our spirituality, our soul, and our mind. And you cannot pretend like the psychology of your well-being is not important, you know, if you're not integrating it.
It's probably the most important, of course. That's what we know. This is directed by this lovely thing.
That beautiful thing, the brain.
So what would you recommend we all do to go into this direction? Shall we be more vulnerable to accept that we need and are open-minded about the help and we just say we are? You know,
yeah,
seeking
I think,
for that, or
you know, my clients, like, they normally come in to me to see me because they have an issue, right? Like, they're like, I'm feeling not motivated, or I'm the CEO of the startup company and I'm, you know, I'm not funding enough money, or I'm the producer of this Hollywood cinema and I'm not coming up with the best.
Because Dr. Kate has a practice in LA as well.
I do, yeah.
San Francisco and LA.
I do. It's my boutique practice. But yeah, so I think helping individuals realize that there's so much more to uncover besides the one symptom that they're coming in for, the one issue that they're coming in for, I think that really creates the opportunity to expand on the knowledge of your childhood. I think that's one thing that I really like about your wine collection too. This is a side note, but you know, your lifeline is connected to the wine experience. And when, you know, when I go to the Ritz, to your tasting room, and Kelly, well, used to be Pamela, now Kelly, when they're pouring the wine, they're sharing these experiences that you had. So that connects me to my own experience, but it also makes me realize that, like, it's so much greater than just my experience with the one wine in that one time period.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great objective you have too. So how can we help in this world to make sure that we go in this direction and in many ways allow people to be more open-minded about all that?
What we have to start talking about it. You know, I think we're in a cultural shift, obviously, with all of the movements that are happening worldwide about the changes that we want to see culturally. And I think as a community, we need to start having conversations about really hard dialogue, such as mental health. I work with a lot of men who are veterans and they have PTSD. I work with ex-football players and football players that have had serious concussions and they're very depressed. And I think that part of what I would like to also see is the opportunity for men to open their experience with the world of psychology and seeking mental health services, because it's just as important for women as it is for men.
So let's talk about men and women for a second.
Okay, let's
do it. A very important topic. In men and women, how different is the brain from
men? Oh, this is my favorite topic.
Of course.
So when a man is at a business meeting, most of the time, they are focused on the one thing that is going on in the business meeting, right? Like if they're the presenter, they're talking about what is happening. A woman could have that exact same job, and in her corpus callosum, which is basically like the middle section that integrates everything in your brain.
Right there.
That corpus callosum is firing at a million miles per second. So if your wife was in the same business meeting as you, for example, she's also thinking about what she's going to feed the kids. Did she leave the coffee pot on? Is she going to go out with her friends? Is she going to create a date night for you? Has she, you know, set up the travel experience? All while she is explaining everything at this business meeting, right?
Amazing.
So women are just a lot more, they just integrate information a lot quicker because it's always circulating and firing, and men typically are more, they're more rigid in the structure of the thought process.
I see.
Nothing's wrong, not good or bad, it just
well,
is what it is.
Well, they both work well together then.
Absolutely, which is why it's really, you know, fantastic when you find a partner that, you know, if...
So what about wine? Are women brain processing wine the same way as men?
I think they are. If it makes them feel good, then they're enjoying it. And that's what wine is about.
But what else on male and female that you could share that is a breakthrough in latest, you know,
the
discoveries?
The latest and greatest? Oh, goodness. Well, I didn't come with that information. I don't think. Cut.
That's okay. Maybe you can elaborate, because that's a fun topic. People will get
So, you need to let me do my research before I come up and
I'm gonna ask you how do women taste?
I don't know that.
Well, women are more analytical and have a better memory bank.
Okay.
So maybe you could go there a little bit, and I could then I'll speak about an experience.
Okay.
But it's very true. It's actually scientifically proven.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, action.
So, Dr. Kate, who tastes better, women or men?
Well, as we know, women have a better olfactive memory. So, you know, they store information on every single time that they've taken in a wine into their hippocampus, which we've talked about, the hippo on the campus. And it creates an emotional connection to the limbic system. And so that ability to obtain that memory is created and established, and then it doesn't go away.
Oh, I'm not surprised now. I know.
You aren't.
Well, my grandmothers were great wine tasters, but my mother, as an example, is the best. You taste a wine with her. It could be a 1947, just to take a vintage.
Mm-hmm.
We typically don't taste often. Or even something more recent. She remembers the moment. So you would say to her, what do you remember? She would not talk about the wine. She would talk about the place, the people she's with, the memory. And then she goes to the wine. It's obvious because it tastes as is. So I can understand why.
Yeah. And women in general, and this is a very general statement, but women are typically a little bit more relational. So that makes sense too, right? Because you just explained your grandmother in this relational capacity where she's experiencing all of these memories of all of her friends and all of her family members. And most of the time, women seem to need more socialization in relational context. And that's not a good or bad thing. It just is
a
difference. Yeah.
I love tasting with women in general because they really as well have that additional sense. That sense that is not contained in the brain, that is maybe all over, right?
Yeah.
That additional je ne sais quoi that really brings them to another level than we are. In fact, you know, with all our winemakers, out of 27 winemakers, we have 15 ladies who make wine.
Wow.
In fact, this wine, besides John and I, is Stephanie Putnam. She creates this wine with us. And I really believe she is really that additional person that makes the wine even better than we think.
And she's over at Raymond as well, right?
That's right.
That's what I thought.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I want to make a big toast to all the fabulous explanation you gave us. But
thank you.
Now I want to go into one more topic.
Okay.
Dr. Kate, it's not yet 50 minutes and you said 50 minutes is your consultation time. So I want to be very cautious of your time. So what is your passion besides all that you've described, besides wanting to make it
For myself?
Yourself.
My passion is the world. Have you ever gotten to go to other cultures and just disappear into the islands of Greece or in a domestic violence shelter in Uganda or, you know, over in Australia and seeing kangaroos hop back and forth? It's so incredible to be able to have the opportunities to be able to see what human beings get to do in other countries in our world. And I think it's such a beautiful experience to be able to go and do as others do.
I'm with you. Have you ever practiced, in fact, in foreign countries, your psychology?
I have not. If I wanted to move to another country, I certainly could. But California stole my heart long ago, and it would be really hard to leave here at this point.
Maybe France. Maybe we could get Dr. Kate to come to France.
Twist my arm. Pull me. I'll go on the next flight over.
Well, we're going to have an amazing journey in France next May. So hopefully you could be with us, and we can learn so much more about neuropsychology and everything you've shared so well tonight.
What are you doing there next year?
We're doing an amazing cruise, which is from Paris to Normandy. And then we are doing the most crazy, insane, fabulous, and eccentric trip, 3-star all along the way, food and accommodation and everything else.
Wow.
From Paris to Burgundy, back to my home.
That
so we'll be tasting a lot of great wines, eating a lot of great food, seeing the culture, the museums, and
sign
and
me enjoying.
Yes,
I will be
there. Everybody's a witness. If you want to meet Dr. Kate.
Teach you all about the brain one day at a time as we go.
Well, so Dr. Kate, any advice for all our friends listening who are obviously experienced a very unique time over the last 5 months? Anything you as Dr. Kate, you know, great practice in San Francisco and another great one in LA, mm-hmm. doing so much for so many. Any advice, any suggestions?
Yes, be gentle and kind on yourselves. It has been such an adjustment period. I think so many of my clients initially were in this adjustment period where it was kind of fun to incorporate the changes that were happening with shelter in place. And now we've been stuck in this season for a long time. And a lot of my clients are starting to feel agitated and frustrated. And, you know, you can't travel the way you used to. You can't even walk into a grocery store the way you used to. And it feels like a loss of independence in a way. And so I think that creating compassion turned inward is really the most important thing that we all need yes. to be doing. Because when you are doing that for yourself, you internally integrate more and more and more, and then you can give it off to other people. And, you know, I think it's really important to maintain a balance of the routines of the things that you enjoy, like working out or going on walks or, you know, spending time cooking with your families yes. and that sort of thing. But it's also really important to realize that this is a huge systemic issue that's happening globally, and never in our lifetimes, not one of us has ever had to go through this. I mean, I've worked with veterans that went to Vietnam, and that experience is different, right? Because it's not every single person that is being exposed to change. And so because of that, I think it's just really important to create inward compassion and kindness, create balance, create structure, make sure that you're connecting relationally and socially, and just be okay with where we are today. And, you know, we're all in this together, and hopefully things are going to shift, and we have beautiful, incredible, intelligent scientists with beautiful minds in them that are hopefully going to create a vaccine. And, you know, one day we're all going to go back to the way we once were. But until then, it's just about being patient.
I love it. And Dr. Kate, how many glasses of wine do you recommend to actually improve our brain?
Well, because this is only one glass, aka one bottle, as you've just shared with me.
I love it.
I think that the answer is up to you.
But that's great. You recommend wine because, of course, we used to prescribe wines as doctors in the old world mm-hmm. for many centuries. So it's yeah. good for you.
Yeah. On your Fridays, put your feet up and enjoy a glass of wine and toast it out with your family and friends and enjoy life the best you can right now.
Well, Dr. Kate, thank you so much for being with us. It was so fun to get our first doctor on the JCB Live. We got a lot of advice, a lot of wisdom, a lot of recommendation, a lot of knowledge about how this beautiful work. It's going to be my new Halloween attire. I'm going to be Mr. Double Brain. We cannot wait to see you very soon, but enjoy your Friday night. And remember, if you need help, call Dr. Kate.
There you go. Cheers, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.